Sometimes I preach lessons that relate to the things that the children are learning in class. Usually I do it the morning of when they are going to be studying it. Decided to do it a little bit differently. What they did was they studied what I'm going to be talking about this morning, and so I'm going to be following it up and adding some things that aren't in the account. For instance, we're going to be talking about a woman named Rahab. And since we're adults here, I want you to understand that we learned that she was a harlot or a prostitute. Now, I will tell you, in the books that the kids study out of, that's not what's mentioned very much. It might have been alluded to, but I couldn't find much about it. And I think that's a good thing. But I think it's important for us to, as grown-ups, to study it and understand in reality who she was. Because it always makes you wonder, well, why does God pick people like that? And he does it all the time in Scripture. And if they are not someone who's actually engaged in something that's wrong, they're people that are engaged in maybe ways of life, like tax collectors and such, where they're not looked down, or they're not looked upon very favorably amongst people. But what had happened is we had come to a period of time here where Israel, they'd been a long time away from this land of Canaan. And in fact, if we understand, we counted up correctly, it's around 400 years that they were in Egyptian captivity, and now they've been wandering around in the wilderness for some 40 years. And they're finally getting there. They're finally getting to go into that promised land. And I'm not sure exactly how they all felt about it. I know that they were a little bit like we are. They're kind of prone to complain, and I can wonder how many times they must have said, are we there yet? When they're wandering out there. They seem to complain in so many other ways. I wouldn't be shocked if they said that. But they had gotten to the point where it was now time for them to cross the River Jordan. They're out in the desert. And, of course, where the prime land was on the other side of the Jordan River. So they're getting prepared to cross. Now, as we consider this, let's understand the background as it's presented to in the beginning of Joshua. What we have found is God has worked with these people. He has worked on the level of providence, where he is clearly involved in things, but not on a miraculous nature. But sometimes they're actually intervention by God, which is clearly miraculous. So they've experienced that, and we get a little bit impatient with them because that doesn't just hold them into God and his and faithfulness to him because they've had these things happen to them. But nevertheless, even though that may shock me and it shocks you that they didn't remain faithful when they experienced all these things, it makes sense because we're so much like they are. God blesses us and we enjoy it. He does marvelous things in the way he has just created us and put us on this earth. And we'll just, for whatever reason, we can easily become just kind of irrational. We just do what we want to do and try to convince ourselves it's the right thing that we're doing. But we're still separated from God. And they seem to go through this all the time. But now they're finally there. And I don't know if they were probably somewhat apprehensive about what was going to happen. We know what happened when they got there before the 40 years, when they just kind of chickened out, is the only way to describe it. And because they had that attitude, they didn't believe in God and they didn't trust God, they didn't go. So they got to wander around in the wilderness. But notice now what is said, why the people, after Joshua had challenged them, he tells them, this is what we're up against. This is what we're going to be doing. It's time for us to go get the land. And of course, one of the things that's emphasized, and you and I have talked about this many times, yes, there were those who were actually going to be fighting physical battles. But there are going to be a lot of people who are going to be meant to be supporters, and it was going to be their role to just obey God. Just do what God says. So after Joshua had challenged them, they were saying, all that you have commanded us, we will do. And wherever you send us, we will go. Just as we obeyed Moses in all things, so we will obey you. It kind of makes you snicker when you hear that. Well, that's what they said. And I know it was always their desire to do that, but they just didn't do it. Only may the Lord your God be with you as he was with Moses. So whatever it might have been that caused Moses to be rejected by the people from time to time, they still held him in incredibly high esteem. It goes on to say, anyone who rebels against your command and does not obey your words and all that you command him shall be put to death, only be strong and courageous. So it's that commitment, it's not a shock to us, those of us who study our Bibles, that these guys are just ready to lay it all on the line, to do what God says, and then it's not that long until they just don't do it. That's just life as it was for them, and sometimes for us. So if you back up a little bit in the text, there's a reminder here of what brings them to this point. Remember the Lord which Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded you, saying, the word of Moses, which Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded you. The Lord your God will give you rest and give you this land. Your wives, your little ones, and your cattle shall remain in the land which Moses gave you beyond the Jordan. But you shall cross before your brothers in battle array and all your valiant warriors, and you shall help them until the Lord gives your brothers rest as he gives you, and they also possess the land which the Lord your God is giving them. Now, they're finding out that this is going to be something where there's going to be some sort of physical battles waged. He's preparing them for that. Then you shall return to your own land and possess that which Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave you beyond the Jordan toward the sunrise. So here they are. The anticipation. Remember, the ones who started out in this journey when they were in the wilderness, these people have all passed away. It's a generation that's gone. And now it's a new generation. And I suspect in some ways they'd been taught a lot about what they were to anticipate when they would go to this land, but they weren't always the best at conveying those ideas to their children, just like we fail from time to time. But it was all based on promises to Abraham and to Moses. So, you know, God is one who makes these promises, and he doesn't often keep them in the time frame that we would like. And I think this is probably true of this particular promise. This was hundreds of years before they actually were standing there, getting ready to cross over the Jordan River to go to the land of Canaan. But you must remember this, many of you do, this famous promise made to Abram at the time. The Lord said to Abram, go forth from your country and from your relatives and from your father's house to the land which I will show you. And that is the land that we're talking about them entering right now. And I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great. And so you shall be a blessing, and I will bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you I will curse, and in you all the families of the earth will be blessed. Now, clearly this is about them eventually getting this land. But you and I know that there's a much deeper, more profound promise here, and that is there's going to be a great blessing for all who would be a part of this family, whether physically in those days, or spiritually now, as we are children of Abraham. So this is what we call a big deal. This is really something that makes you kind of excited when you read how it was presented. And now they're finally getting to experience it. Well, the promise was made to Abraham, and the promise was also made to Moses. Exodus 3. Moses said to God, who am I that I should go on to Pharaoh, and that I should bring the sons of Israel out of Egypt? This is when he's been told that this is going to be his job. And he said, certainly I will be with you, and this shall be the sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you shall worship God at this mountain. So he's saying, you're eventually going to understand that when I make this promise to you, we're going to get right back to where these people are going to be able to live. And you need to know that when I promised it to Abraham, and now I've promised it to you, it was a sure thing that it was going to happen. But look at all that amount of time. We're just not that patient as people. Is it any wonder that people learn the truth and then they wander off? Because we're just not that patient. We want something to happen real fast. We want sort of what we call instant gratification. It just doesn't work that way. God says, I'm going to promise something to you, and I will decide when I'm going to fulfill the promise. And it's up to me and you to remain faithful to him. Pretty challenging, isn't it? I mean, no wonder, you know, Peter talks about, you know, how a day is a thousand years to the Lord as a thousand years is a day, or a day is a thousand years. Because that's what it seems like. It seems like if he's going to come back and I'm going to have to stand before him and I'm going to be judged for who I am and I'm going to either end up in heaven or hell, why don't they just do this? Why don't they get back faster? Because, you know, I just can't hang on to this too long. That's the way God always works. He makes the promises and he says, okay, you remain faithful, but I promise I'll keep it. So here they are, promise made to Abraham, promise made through Moses, to Moses. Down in chapter 15, verse 17 of Exodus, you will bring them and plant them in the mountain of your inheritance, the place, O Lord, which you have made for your dwelling, the sanctuary, O Lord, which your hands have established. So that's what's going to happen. Now, here is this lady, Rahab, who's going to make a rather fantastic contribution to this whole effort. She lives in a house up on the wall of the city, and that was not unusual for prostitutes to have homes up there. You could see where people would come and go into the town. It would be easy access for them to do business. So that's where she is. And so here she is providentially in this place. And Joshua sends a couple of spies. Remember when he sent 12? Or Moses sent 12? And it didn't work out all that well. That's when I said they chickened out. Well, maybe Joshua thought it might be a little bit better if we just have a couple of guys go in there and see how that works out. Maybe that'll work out better and they'll come back with a better report. I don't know, but they do. But they meet this lady and they establish, you know, a relationship. She begins to find out who they are. And this is something that rings a bell with her because she's been hearing about these people. And she knows about them. She knows about Israel. She lives in this town, Jericho, an evil town. But they were there staying with this woman, and they were going to lay down, as it says there. She came up to them on the roof. She put them up there so they could rest. And here's what she says. I know that the Lord has given you the land, and that the terror of you has fallen on us, and that all the inhabitants of the land have melted before you. Now they're going to name a nation here, a couple of groups of people that they have already engaged in battle, and they defeated them, and the word's out. And she's becoming some kind of a believer. If these people are just on the other side of the river, and there would have been a lot of them, and they would have certainly been aware of it, it's not that far from the river where Jericho is, I can understand why their hearts are melting. Because this is just a lot of people. And they've already defeated others. We have heard how, verse 10, we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea. So they already heard the first blocking of the river, or the sea in this particular case, so they could pass out of Egypt. And what you did to the two kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan, to Sihon and Og, whom you utterly destroyed. And so when we heard it, our hearts melted and no courage remained in any man any longer because of you. For the Lord your God, he is God in heaven above and on earth beneath. Now, she's obviously afraid. So when this thing starts out, I want you to understand, you know, that she is used as an example of faith in the book of James and in the book of Hebrews. We're going to look at those verses in just a second. But it seems to start out that what she's really interested in, she understands who these people are, and she believes that if they are going to come in and they're going to take all those places and first take Jericho, we're just really in a world of hurt. So, I mean, she doesn't make some sort of confession. Excuse me. She doesn't make some sort of confession about how she believes in the God of Israel. She does acknowledge who God is. And maybe she had more insight into who they were and what they were than what we really know. But for the most part, it's just about saving her skin and saving the skin of her family. In Joshua 2:12, she engages them and they come to an agreement. She says, now therefore, please swear to me by the Lord, since I have dealt kindly with you. And what she had done is she had hidden them and told some untrue stories about where they were. That you also will deal kindly with my father's household and Give me a pledge of truth. And spare my father, my mother, my brothers, and my sisters, with all who belong to them, and deliver our lives from death. So she's a pretty shrewd cookie, really, isn't she? I mean, she's understanding what's going to happen. I've taken care of you. I've hidden you. So will you take care of me? So they end up coming to a decision that that's exactly what they're going to do, but they're told. The spies say, look, I want you to understand that, yes, I'm going to protect your family, but they can't go wandering around out there in the street and expect me to protect them. What you need to do is put them in your house, and you put that little red string or red cord or red piece of rope, just depends on the way you try to understand that. Obviously, whatever it was something they could see. You put that up, and I promise you, if you're in the house, you're good. You're going to be taken care of. And so that's exactly what happened. They destroyed the city, everybody but her family, just like God had promised. And so at that point, that's all we know about her. You kind of think, well, this worked out pretty well for her. But we find out other things about her that ought to give us or enhance our understanding of what this woman became, because she obviously became more of the person that God wanted than what she was at that time. And so if you just read the story and then you jump over here and read like Hebrews 11:31, by faith Rahab the harlot did not perish along with those who were disobedient after she had welcomed the spies in peace. So is that it? Is that all she had to do in order to be pleasing to God? And I mean, God could have put her on that list of the faithful, the hall of faith, as we call it, just for what she did. I mean, she trusted God. She trusted the promise of the people of God. So what did she show? What did she demonstrate? She demonstrated faith. She believed and she did something with her faith. Again, we cannot ignore that. It's always faith partners with action in God's religious economy, if you will. It's always that way. And yet so many have tried to just dismiss the whole idea of obedience. Oh, they acknowledge that obedience is a good thing. But then when you start saying, well, is it something that's essential to salvation? It's, man, they just about pass out. You know, how dare you make such a statement? Don't you believe in the grace of God? Yeah, I believe in the grace of God, but I also believe in this very distinct pattern that says, if you are a person of faith, you believe information, and then you act upon it in obedience to God. So yes, what she did showed great trust in God, but notice what else it says in James chapter 2. She's also used an example there, a very famous passage about trying to join faith and works in a way that people can understand. You see that a man is justified by works and not by faith alone. In the same way, was not Rahab the harlot also justified by works when she received the messengers and sent them out by another way? It's so striking, isn't it? I mean, James is just saying, come on, now think about this for a second. Those of you who want to deny that works has anything to do with justification, he says, think about this. What did the harlot Rahab do? She received the messengers, and what did she do? She sent them out by another way. She believed in the power of God. She believed that she didn't want to be a part of the destruction that was going to come to the city of Jericho. And so because of that, then what happens? She's given to us as an example. And, you know, it troubles us sometimes because, you know, she's a woman who's, you know, not the kind of person. You know, we get a little bit like, I think, our distant relatives in Israel, so to speak, also children of Abraham back in those days. And, you know, we quickly want to say, oh, but I'm sure she straightened her life out. Well, she does. We don't hear much about that straightened out life, but she does. But she's laid out there. Why is she an example? Because she ultimately changed her life? Well, that's was the meaty response that she brought. But it was simple enough that she believed in God and acted upon it. That's what faith is. That's what James says, and that's what the Hebrew writer says. So what was it that saved her? Well, it's faith that saves people, but it's faith that acts. Habakkuk is a prophet, and he's the one who was getting all upset with God because the people of Babylon were making such havoc all over that part of the world, and they're evil people, and they wanted to know. Habakkuk wants to know, are you going to do something about it? And so God says, yes, I'm going to do something about it. But then notice what he ends the promise. He says, okay, the Lord answered me and said, record the vision and inscribe it on tablets that the one who reads it may run. In other words, make it plain, so people can understand it, even if they're running along reading it. For the vision is yet for the appointed time. In other words, he's saying something's going to happen to those people. I promise it. He says it hastens toward the goal and it will not fail. Though it tarries, wait for it. There's that waiting thing again. For it will certainly come and it will not delay. Behold, as for the proud one, his soul is not right within him. Now get this. But the righteous will live by his faith. You got faith, you live by it. And so we read in Romans 10:17, a passage with which we are very familiar. It says, so faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the word of Christ. But what does it always end up doing? Creates obedience. Paul talks about that in the first chapter of Romans. But it's this powerful truth that's stated by Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount. Matthew 7:24. I mean, it's just a principle of reality for God and his relationship with the ones he's created. Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and acts on them may be compared to a wise man who built his house on the rock. And the rain fell and the floods came and the winds blew and slammed it against that house, yet it did not fall, for it had been founded on the rock. Get this. Everyone who hears these words of mine and does not act on them will be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. So how silly is it to say, oh yes, I have my faith, I just choose not to live according to it. And I know God's going to cut me some slack because, you know, he knows I'm a pretty decent person. But you can think all you want about what God's going to do for you. I mean, we all need the slack of God, if you will. We call it his grace. But don't excuse it for living a life which is opposite of what God says and say, he's going to save me because of that. Because he says, the just shall live by faith. Well, it's the just who live by faith, not people who just decide to identify with faith. They live by it. And so it's this fundamental principle. You hear my words, you go out and do something. Well, there is something that we read about a little bit later that we'll close with this in terms of understanding what role she had with these people. Now, she did survive, you know that. She and her family. And then when you go over and read the genealogy of Christ, it's fascinating. What do you read? Salmon was the father of Boaz by Rahab. Now, no one disputes that this is the same Rahab. Just to mention it like this has caused most people to say, oh, there couldn't have been another one. Boaz was the father of Obed by Ruth, and Obed the father of Jesse. Jesse was the father of David the king. David was the father of Solomon by Bathsheba, who had been the wife of Uriah. We know that sad story. So here's a guy. What does he end up doing? Or here's a lady who was a harlot who ends up giving herself, as far as I can see, the evidence is she became a faithful person of God. Because she believed what God was all about, believed the promises, believed the power of God. And she says, I'm not going to try to face up against this because I know I and everybody else here in Jericho is going to lose. And so she becomes a part of that group of people and becomes a part of the lineage of Christ. So she took that experience that was pretty amazing, how God took care of her and her family. And she realized that if I'm going to believe in God, if I'm going to be a person who says, I put my faith in God, well, then I'm going to worship and live according to God's will. She becomes a part of those people and also is a part of the lineage of Christ. It's amazing, isn't it? So, what happens? A few days go by and it's time to cross the river. The priest, they put the Ark of the Covenant, you know, all the things in it that showed and demonstrated the presence of God. Aaron's rod, some manna, and of course, the Ten Commandment plates. So the priests have that, and they lead, and they get to the river, and it just walls up, and it stops. I mean, can you imagine this one? I think about this a lot, because this would have been something that would have been passed along generationally, because at least somebody had to know about what happened at the Red Sea. And, you know, maybe some of these younger ones, were thinking, wow, that couldn't have happened. You know these old people, they're all crazy. They make up stories. And then they're standing there, and the same thing that happened at the Red Sea happens in their presence. Why? Well, the people follow. The flow of the river is stopped. And, of course, why? Look at chapter 4 of Joshua, verse 23 and 24, and we'll bring it to a close. For the Lord your God dried up the waters of the Jordan before you until you had crossed, just as the Lord your God had done to the Red Sea. It was true, whatever you may have heard, which he dried up before us until we had crossed, that all the peoples of the earth may know that the hand of the Lord is mighty, so that you may fear the Lord your God forever. Now the test for me and for you, this is where it gets hard for people. It's people read something like this and they think, oh, it happened so long ago, I just don't know if I can believe that or not. And I understand that. I'm sure people have always been that way. We all are a little bit that way from time to time. You know, why hasn't God returned? But he promised he's going to do it. And so what that puts in my heart is a sense of faithfulness to who he is. Because when he makes promises, he keeps them. But he just doesn't fulfill them as fast as I think he ought to. And that's exactly what happened to Israel when they were wandering around in the wilderness. Always impatient. Always forgetting the last good thing that God did for them. But why were these things done? Just so people have cute stories to tell? No. So that all the peoples of the earth may know of the hand, or that the hand of the Lord is mighty. So people might fear the Lord your God forever. So don't dismiss these stories in any way. Yes, these are things that we often learn as children. Our children are learning them now. Ultimately what happened was the city was taken. And there's quite a story involved in that. And I know some of the kids went over what happened when the walls fell. But for me and for you, we learn from Rahab that God works with strange people, as far as the way we look at it. But God seems to know the kind of people who are going to carry out what it is he has revealed to them. Some people do it, some people don't. In this case, Rahab did. And that's what makes her someone worthy of being used as an example of why works is important, or why faith is important that leads to action. It's something that should be soul-stirring to us all, those of us, because we are a people who really believe in the importance of struggling to try to get it right and to be the church that God wants us to be and not be the church that, you know, looks like everybody else. The just shall live by faith. It was true of Rahab, and it's true of me and you. Trust in the salvation provided by Jesus. It was a couple of thousand years ago, but it's just as valid today as it was then. The blood of Christ has washed people, if you will, all these years. And it still saves. Why not be baptized into Christ and communicate to your own heart and your conscience that you understand what baptism is all about, because it is through that one understands and experiences the death, burial, and resurrection of Christ. That's our lesson for this evening. Thank you for being patient. I always appreciate it. I try to acknowledge it from time to time. But I hope we learn things that place in our hearts the faith in what God has revealed in His Word. If you want to become a Christian, you know what you need to do. Please come forward and we'll do all we can to help you carry out that. Shall we stand and sing?
Do not let the word depart and close thine eyes against the light. Poor sinner, harden not your heart. Be saved, O tonight. O what? Not tonight. O why? Not tonight. Will thou be saved? Then why not tonight? Tomorrow sun may never rise to bless thy long deluded sight. This is the time of them, be wise, be saved, O tonight. O why not tonight? O why not tonight? Will thou be saved? Then why not tonight? Our blessed Lord refuses none who would to Him their souls unite. Believe, obey, the work is done. Be saved, O tonight. O why not tonight? O why not tonight? Will thou be saved? Then why not tonight?
Please be seated. We bring our worship to a close this